Arguing on behalf of the Milwaukee Regional Medical Center is Attorney Margaret M. Darris, is it? And you may proceed, counsel. You may go. Your turn. Thank you.
Please the court and good afternoon. My name is Margaret Darris, and I'm representing the petitioner, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center, Inc. The Milwaukee Regional Medical Center Daycare Center is exempt from property tax under one of two statutes, either as county-owned property or as educational association property used for educational purposes. The first is under Section 7011, Parent 2. The other is under Section 7011, Parent 4. The essence of the controversy as to the county ownership question is whether the property should continue, or whether the court should continue to apply its longstanding balancing test and weigh all of the indicia of ownership between the lessor and the lessee to determine who is the beneficial owner of the property. Or, as Judge Fine indicated, whether only one side of the ledger should be considered and whether only financial benefits and control related to those financial benefits are favored in determining ownership. MRMC believes that the court's longstanding balancing test, in which all of the indicia are considered and weighed in the context of the facts and circumstances of the property and the lease, continues to be legally and practically the best approach. The hallmarks of ownership of property are that the owner can decide what is built on the property, who can use the property, and how it can be used. Deriving financial benefits is only one factor in how the property can be used. Because every piece of property that the government may own is different, and the government lessor's needs are different, every lease will be different. The only way to take account of these differences is to consider all of the indicia of ownership. As was noted in the Mitchell Arrow case, weighing all the indicia of ownership may not be easy, but it is the only way to take account of all the possible differences that there may be as to property and as to leases. The essence of the controversy as regards the educational association exemption is whether an entity that has multiple functions but uses that property solely for educational purposes can qualify as an educational association. In other words, must an organization be forced to establish a separate legal entity to isolate its educational function from its other tax-exempt entities to qualify for the exemption? MRMC believes that neither the statute nor case law requires that result. Section 7011(4) states that the property must be owned and used exclusively by an educational association. It does not require that the association be exclusively educational. The word exclusively is an adverb, not an adjective. No case has specifically addressed this issue. However, the test set forth in Engineers and Scientists of Milwaukee and its progeny does not disqualify a diverse organization with multiple tax-exempt purposes from qualifying as an educational association. This court summarized the issue in the Engineers and Scientists case and has repeatedly said that the court must look to the facts to determine whether the primary use to which the property is put comes within the compass of what the legislature has denominated as an educational association. The courts have identified an organizational test in the statute, but the organizational test has yet to be addressed by this court directly.
Now, counsel, are you arguing the two statutes in the alternative, or are you arguing that they both apply?
I'm arguing in the alternative. Both statutes require that the property be owned by the association. So it's either owned by the county company or it's owned by the county. It can't be both.
Right. And you're, under sub 2, you're arguing that the county is the beneficial owner.
Correct.
And if the county is not the beneficial owner, then you're arguing that MRMC is the owner under sub 4.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Even though we are arguing in the alternative, We would ask this court to address both of the exemptions. So even if this court determines that the property is owned by the county, we would ask the court to consider whether or not the Educational Association exemption might apply if it is owned, if it were to be considered owned by the MRMC. The reason being that under the county ownership exemption, the only thing that's exempt is the land and buildings. Under the educational exemption, what would be exempt is the land, the buildings, and the personal property. In the educational exemption, the court did identify the test as that the organization must be substantially and primarily devoted to educational purposes, but the International Foundation Court explained in the very next sentence that this determination requires a careful analysis of the facts concerning how the property is actually being used.
Counselor, was this daycare center built at the suggestion or request of the county, or was it at the request of the center?
There was an interest by the county to have a daycare center on the county grounds. MRMC then approached the county and indicated that it would be willing to build the center and operate it if the county would lease the land to them.
So the initial sort of idea came from the county?
I can't say if it was simultaneous or if one was quickly after the other, but they were very close in proximity.
Okay, thank you.
Why would the county have had that interest?
Looking at where the facility is located, it's on grounds which are county institution grounds. There are a large number of entities on that ground, including the county mental health center. And there was no daycare center anywhere near the facilities to assist the employees of those various organizations in having daycare close by.
Could I ask you, are there implications? And there are obviously implications when you have an opinion all over the state, but are there other implications for other property of this property owner? Are we just worried about an annual tax bill, or is there something more at play here?
I think it goes beyond this particular organization and its tax bill. The question of who owns property can implicate public-private partnerships throughout the state. The state government, the county government, owns a great deal of land. As we all know, right now, government financing is very tight. And what some governments, including this particular lease, have chosen to do is to enter into public-private partnerships where county funds or other government funds don't have to be used to be able to build facilities, operate certain enterprises that are for the benefit of the entire community, but don't require the use of public funds to do. And so it can have very broad implications as to how government and private enterprise interact.
And the annual tax bill, is it like any other tax bill that some goes to a municipality and some goes to the county and some goes to...
Yes.
Where is the county in this whole thing?
Well, it is just like any other tax bill that you or I would get on our homes. It is a tax based on the city assessor's determination of value times the total tax rate. And within that, a portion goes to each of those overlying jurisdictions that you mentioned. I don't know Milwaukee County's percentage offhand. I believe it is in the range of 15% to 20% in Milwaukee County.
So that would be affected by this case, too?
Yes, it would.
In fact, I was just looking at the tax bill, which is in Appendix 129, that Milwaukee, on a total tax bill, this is for, I think, 2003, they receive, Milwaukee County would receive their tax share of the $40,271 taxes, $10,731.46, and Wauwatosa's net tax is $12,908.54.
Yes, thank you.
I'm just noticing that that is split between, you know, the various entities.
Thank you, Justice Wilcox. Yes, that is how that tax bill is read. And like most municipalities in the state, a substantial portion also goes to the school district. In this case, of that tax, it would be about $40,000.
The rent is?
The rent that is paid under the lease? Well, the rent in the first years, the first 30 years, is nominally stated to be a dollar a year. However, there are a lot of other financial benefits that the county gets as a result of the lease. Just going through a couple of them, the county wanted a daycare center. They got a daycare center with absolutely not a nickel of public expenditure. Not only do they get that initially, the building to be used as a daycare center, they also get that operation without any cost to the municipality or to the county, because MRMC pays all of the costs of operation. I might note that MRMC in the one of the 3 years of this lease actually lost money. On average, of those three years, they only made about $25,000. So it's not a situation where the MRMC is making a great deal of money and the county is only getting a dollar. So during the lease, they get that. In the last 20 years, the county gets the rent of 10% of the land at a minimum. If market rates are higher, they will get market rates. Using that $2,003, that's about $59,000 a year. Also, during the full term of the lease, MRMC is obligated to pay the prorated portion of the county's obligation to build a fire station in the city of Wauwatosa and to pay for, I believe it was 15 firefighters.
Now they pay, let me ask, I think since you raised that point, you pay a portion of to the county, and I think you're opposing counsel indicated that works out to about $185 a month.
For that single item, yes.
For that item.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing, and maybe I had to step out for a minute to get a Kleenex. I have a question regarding the mortgage ability. In other words, maybe that was asked. Or if
it no,
was,
it wasn't.
I don't want to repeat.
Go ahead.
Basically, as I understand it, you can go, and again, this is what Wauwatosa is asserting, you can go to a bank and you can get a loan on this. How does that work with 7011-2 as far as being a beneficial owner? In other words, would a bank, is that because of the 30-year, the long time?
Yeah, well, in fact, the lease says that the building and the land cannot be used as collateral on a mortgage. So the land itself, the property itself, cannot be mortgaged. And it goes on to say that the county's rights in that cannot be affected in any way, and the county cannot be held obligated in any way. So there's just an ability to mortgage the leasehold interest.
Right. And I guess what I'm asking is, how does that square up with ownership? Just that it's just a leasehold and it makes no difference?
Yes, it would be the same thing as a commercial building that's built on any other piece of property. The tenant, as it were, could always mortgage their leasehold interest. Whether or not the bank would consider that sufficient to grant money and to give them funds is another question. You may notice in the bonds, which are in the record, the bonds are not just for the daycare center. The bonds are issued to our MRMC. The daycare center is one of the items that's noted in that bond. But the bond also goes on to say, and warning the bondholder, that if the bondholder has to foreclose on that bond. There's absolutely no assurance that the bondholder will get anything from this property because of the severe limitations placed on that. If I may mention
could I ask,
Mr. Prosser.
I don't want to overgeneralize here, but would it be fair to say that cities want you to lose this case?
I beg your pardon?
Cities want you to lose this case. Is that a fair generalization?
I think if cities are looking at a very short-term view, it's probably fair to say that they'd like us to lose this case.
Okay. How about counties?
Counties have not indicated. I think they may be more neutral because of the number of leases that they have out there, and it may affect their ability. Again, if they look just in the short term, they may want us to lose as well. But it was indicated by the dissent and pointed out in the dissent in Mitchell Arrow that although the taxpayers may win today, what the implications may be of not allowing an exemption over the long term may actually be very detrimental to government.
So let's say the implications, what are the dire consequences here that you see if we were to rule against you? In other words, the city makes the argument, look, we need, and maybe the county, it's a revenue, why shouldn't it be taxed? It doesn't fit under 7011, and you're saying, well, we would like, this is good for the public to have this, and it's detrimental. Would this mean you'd have to raise the cost of to people using it, daycare, raise some costs there? In other words, what is the effect okay. you see?
Well, first I would say that it should be exempt because it's qualified under the statute.
Yes.
But in terms of the public policy and what may happen should this have to be taxable, I think for MRMC it is very possible that the fees at the daycare center may have to be raised because right now the members subsidize the running of the daycare center. That can be seen in the financial statements. They're called member dues. And that subsidy may not be able to be done at least to the extent of the amount of the taxes. The other thing that I think could happen, and I think it's a far more important and far more pervasive concern, is that all public-private leases could be changed and could be renegotiated in different ways, which would not make it anywhere nearly as beneficial to the county in the long run.
Doesn't
or to
that
the government.
Depend on the nature? These are, as I read the cases, the Mitchell case, the Crystal Ridge case, and others. It's sort of a case-by-case balancing, which you look at. And is it unusual to have a, quote, 50-year lease as opposed to a 10-year lease or 20, or is that the incentive to get someone to build something of significance to entice them, or that's the way it normally is done?
Yeah. Well, it will vary a great deal depending upon the type of property and the cost of the property and how quickly the operations are expected to be able to cover the cost of building whatever it is. So, as we saw, those years can vary anywhere from 20 years up to the 50 years. 50 years are not uncommon. And the more substantial the building, the more substantial the cost. In this case, it cost actually $1.5 million to build. The more substantial the cost, the longer the period will have to be.
And again, I'm just, as I recall the argument, well, look, if you do this, you take, I think it's assessed at around $1.2 million or something like that, or maybe more than that. This comes off the tax roll, and that affects what the others pay, as well as it affects the beneficial ownership. The beneficial ownership here is that's one of the key components of how we.
Yes.
And we're supposed to. Do you think we should? This. I think the argument has been, well, it's strictly construed. In other words, you have to have all of your I's dotted and the T's crossed before you fall into the tax exemption area.
Yes. And we believe even strictly construed, the balancing test favors MRMC when you look at the lease as a whole. I believe that if all the indicia are considered, not just the financial indicia, not just today, then I think it's very clear, as the trial court had held, and the dissent at the Court of Appeals had held, that it's very clear that MRMC has more indicia of ownership than the county, although it may be a close call. In terms of whether or not the taxpayers or other property owners would have to pick up the difference, it is always true whenever there's an exemption that the total budget has to be covered in some fashion. And so there will be some small, very small shift in taxes. That is true of any exemption. But the benefits that come back in terms of having public services available will also offset that.
Does it make any sense in looking at this 50 years that the first 30 years, let's say that it's been challenged as far as not being tax exempt? Clearly what you're saying is that after 30 years, then the county takes a more active role, gets more money. Does that make any difference?
I don't believe it does. I don't think you can take any contract and parcel it out. And if we were to split this contract at the 30-year mark, what effectively you'd be doing is taking the identical lease for the first 20 years saying it's exempt, or excuse me, it's taxable, for the last 20 years saying it's exempt. And I don't think you can split.
But don't you look at the last 20 to determine the first 30? So that you look at, I think that's the point of Justice Wilcox's question, that you look at the whole 50 years, so maybe the benefit's not so great in year three, but when you look at the totality of the 50, you have a benefit. You can say that the account, that the government is the beneficial owner.
Yes, when you look at
Well, yes, because I think maybe I made the point, and I don't want to emphasize any, but it's a dollar a year. So, but your argument to that is, well, yes, it is, but it changes. For the first 30 years, it's a dollar a year.
Yes.
But it changes over the course of this leasehold.
Yes, it does. And if you take the entire lease and quantify it just in 2003 dollars, and we'll assume that inflation offsets the any depreciation in the property because MRMC has to maintain the property. If you total up everything that would be paid over the 50-year period, that amounts to about $3,390,000. That includes rent, building, the fair market value of the building, fire protection, and insurance, which the county is getting free of charge, MRMC is paying for, and the county is the co-insured or the additional insured. That gives you a per-year benefit to the county of $67,800, roughly.
How much in taxes would it get?
Let's see. In 2003, the tax bill, I believe, was
$40,000.
Yes, it was $40,000.
Counselor, if there had been no daycare built on this property, it wouldn't be taxed, right?
It would not be taxed.
Right. So what we're looking at is whether having a property that was not taxed before, when a daycare center is added, should then change the beneficial ownership of that property because the benefits of the daycare center don't outweigh the ability of a private party to use the public's property.
I think that's essentially the question, yes.
Yeah, but most daycare centers have to pay tax.
Many do.
Yeah, okay. So the question is, do you give private enterprise the benefit of a tax exemption that a government institution has for its own property, right? And it would seem that the goal of the statute and the goal of the interpretation is if the county, city, whatever, is the beneficial owner, then, of course, it should get the exemption. It's property. It is the beneficial owner. it shouldn't pay taxes to itself.
Right? That's correct.
But even if the community is the title owner, which it is, if it is not the beneficial owner and the real owner is a private enterprise other than an educational association, then it pays taxes. Otherwise, what it does is it increases the tax burden on the rest of us guys who are in that community paying property tax. Mm-hmm. And we're unhappy with somebody that looks like us but seems to be getting off with using the government exemption. I mean, that's the problem here.
I see my light is on. May I respond?
May I respond, yes.
There's a substantial difference between the MRMC daycare center or any other tax-exempt daycare center and a taxable one. A taxable daycare center builds its own building. It decides how it's going to use it. It decides who's going to use it. And it decides what fees it's going to charge and has complete control over everything. Mm-hmm. In this situation, the MRMC daycare has substantial restrictions on it. MRMC didn't decide exactly what the plans and specs were going to be for the building. The county did. MRMC doesn't get to decide who uses it. It can only be MRMC. They can't sublease it. They can't assign the lease. They can't sell the property. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a substantial difference between the two in that the private one can control completely.
All of which these restrictions are indicia of ownership and exercise of control.
Yes.
All of which would indicate don't pay taxes.
Yes, I would say so. Thank you.
Ms. Aldana, representing the city of Wauwatosa.
Thank you. May it please the court. I am Beth Aldana. I'm assistant city attorney for the city of Wauwatosa. I believe somewhere here today we have the city assessor with us in the courtroom as well. Let me begin where you just left off with your discussion with opposing counsel. When you're discussing these indicia of ownership that go to this true or real ownership, in this case, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center's indicia of owner vastly outweighs the county. And all of these cases talk about weighing it. We've talked about it in our briefs. And when you talk about weighing something, I start seeing a scale. In this case, the scale doesn't start out evenly balanced. It starts out tipped in favor of taxation. And that goes back to Section 70-109, which has three parts. These statutes, exemption statutes, are to be strictly construed. The burden of proof is on the taxpayer seeking the exemption, and the property is presumed taxable. So from the beginning, this scale is tipped in favor of taxation. The indicia of ownership analysis is somewhat tedious in that there are a lot of lease provisions, several cases to talk about. But I think I can get to the point with just a couple observations. Milwaukee County gave up exclusive use of this property for 50 years. For that, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center pays $1 a year for 30 years and market rates thereafter.
What about the argument, and I was waiting, because that was in your brief, and I asked the question of opposing counsel. They responded, yes, but over the 50 years, we're paying $3,390,000. So when you break this down over 50 years, it's $67,000 a year. Now, I don't know. You, the two figures I looked at were $1 a year and $185 a month. But then they said the insurance. I'm not quite clear on the insurance part.
Yeah, thank you. As I understood, her calculations included four parts, which would be the total rent, a dollar plus market value later, the fair market of the building, which, let me address it this way. First of all, it was addressed in Mitchell Arrow, which was held to be taxation. In that case, as here, the title to the building was actually held by the lessee. The title doesn't revert to the county until the end of the 50 years. And so in the city's opinion, we have better facts than Michelero because the title reverted to the county as soon as that building was constructed in Michelero. So in terms of beneficial ownership and weighing it, I don't think that has much weight. The fire I did address in the brief, as you mentioned, if it's, in my opinion, a nominal amount when you talk about this property. It's, if you take the land and the improvements, it's $1.8 million in 2003. That's prime real estate in the city of Wauwatosa. And a $180 payment a month for fire pales in comparison to what a fair market rent would be.
But, Councilor, you couldn't rent this property absent some kind of an agreement. In other words, there wasn't anything on this property. It was vacant land where the building was built, right?
I think it was vacant.
And there were no taxes that were being paid at the moment. So the only way that there can be any kind of a taxation is if, in fact, the use of this property somehow gave up the county's right to have a tax-free parcel. And, you know, the councilor's argument is that, well, if we don't go along with agreements like this, then why would private parties ever want to get involved in building something that's so restricted by the county's wishes? Why would they ever want to do that? Why wouldn't they just purchase some land from a private person and build their own daycare center?
Well, let's look at the specifics of this case. This particular daycare, first, the record is not really developed on what this does for the county. Whether it had any value in the land other than financial before it gave up exclusive use is really beyond the scope of our record. But the daycare serves almost half general public, and of the other half, it's not just county employees, it's this smattering of other members of this consortium. So it's not something that is built for the county, serves the county, and it helps the public policy in that way. But your statement is true. I mean, the question of taxation didn't come up until the property was leased to the Milwaukee Regional Medical Center.
Right.
Council, if I can follow up on your answer, I refer to pages 6 and 7 of the reply brief by Ms. Darris. She seems to highlight a number of things that she argues the lease does for the county. In terms of one, control, and in terms of two, benefit. It seems, at least from her perspective, it's not just about the payment of rent.
Just so I'm sure where you are you talking about the non-beneficial ownership that she's mentioned? If you just direct me to...
On pages 6 and 7 of the reply brief, the gray brief, I'm not sure which issue she was referring it to, but I'm referring to the beneficial ownership issue.
Sure.
In that respect.
I think the first set of bullet points on 6, she's indicating, in her opinion, go to the issue of control.
Right.
If you ask me, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center's best facts are the first one, that it has to be built and used as a daycare. Now, we haven't talked about some of the other facts in the other case, but when you can look at the other types of controls that have supported exemption, that is not the kind of control that is warranted exemption. The kind of controls in the other cases that is warranted exemption are day-to-day operational control, and in fact, the lessors in those cases, the county and the state, were either explicitly a joint venture with the lessee, or in essence the joint venture, so they were tied in terms of the financial success. So the restriction that it has to be a daycare overall, when you take all of the indicia, I don't think it tips the scale significantly.
But she argues it's more than that. It's that daycare serves 140 people, that has to cost at least $400,000. It requires approval for property, written approval for property for parking, to install fencing, to obtain a county approval for all additions, buildings, or alterations to the property, costing more than $50,000, prohibits from assigning or subletting the property. These are a number of different facets of control, and I'm not sure where we would draw the line in terms of how much control is sufficient under the statute.
And I would absolutely agree that there indicia, or at least arguably indicia of county ownership. Where I would differ, though, is the weight that's to be given to that, particularly in light of the facts that we know from the other cases. And if you think of it in terms of a spectrum, which I have come to think of it that way, with our case being on the far side of and being the best facts in favor of taxation for the reasons I mentioned a few minutes ago, then Mitchell Arrow, which was also held to be taxable. Then there's this area in between until we get to an exemption case, which would I would suggest Gephardt and then and the even further Crystal Ridge. The good news is we don't have to decide where that point is, where it turns from taxable to exempt, either in this case or any other. We just have to decide in general which side is it on. So how your question was, how would you decide if it's enough? Well, if you look at Mitchell, or if you look at Gephardt, for example, the state reserves use of that property for 2 months of the year for its own purposes. That case involved an ice skating rink at the state fairgrounds. It leased it to a private business owner who built the facility, and I believe that was even more expensive than this building back in the 70s. I think it was $500,000. Reserved the use for 2 months, and it also reserved the exclusive right to run concession stands. And obviously, it does elaborate on that. They made revenues from that. It also required the lessee to post hours. Indicating what its fees were. It said you've got to cater to neighborhood groups. It said you can't go into the state fairgrounds when these types of things go on. You can't build bleachers because that's going to interfere with the state's use. And could you improve the property to serve the state's needs for $15,000? So that's an example of what's too much. I mean, that's where the state has remained involved and is exerting control that is it weighs heavier in favor of beneficial ownership in the state. Crystal Ridge, that was a joint venture between the county and this developer. First of all, I didn't elaborate on the rent in Gephardt, but the rent was and the revenues combined were over $70,000 for 1 year back in the mid-70s, a significant revenue from that relationship. But in Crystal Ridge, this joint venture was where the Milwaukee County decided they wanted the ski hill built, and they said, well, it's either $10,000 or the greater of 3% of your gross profits. And over a five-year period that they talk about in the case, it was $744,000, so a significant benefit. And in that case, the county said they prescribed the accounting method that had to be used, the record keeping that had to be used, the cash management. So they set the hours of operation. They set the prices of the ski lift. They set the prices of the food, concession stands, and menus. And so when you look at these other examples, it gives you a sense that while the bullet points we just talked about in the reply brief, they are indicia of county ownership, but our scale is still tipping heavily in favor of taxation.
What would the scale be after 30 years of the lease?
Well, I think it would shift. I don't think it would necessarily shift in favor of exemption. I think the further in time down the lease, the less relevant it is to the particular tax year that we're talking about. Judge Fine talked about that in his opinion. You know, under different facts, that it would certainly shift the scale differently. But I think timing in lease goes to weight given to the indicia.
The relationship between the center and the county, does Wauwatosa have anything like that with anybody?
Where we have leased land, you know, I couldn't say yes or no. The city attorney is sitting here, he probably could. But, I mean, for example, we have some real estate relationships in our research park. You know, and the exact nature of those, I'm not sure. I do know in the research park where the city owns land upon which a significant commercial building was built. It is taxable, and it was because of, and it was drafted into the lease.
What actually is the leasehold? Because I know that you made a point that the leasehold could be offered as collateral for a mortgage. So what are we talking about exactly would be the collateral to the possible lender?
Well, I think the leasehold interest is the whole property, but I think opposing counsel is correct that only the building can be mortgaged as, or collateral for a mortgage.
Well, to me, that seems somewhat significant, and I was trying to compare it with some other cases that you just mentioned, the three. The fact that someone would take in other words, would loan money on this interest when the true owner was someone else. I mean, that is that unique, or is that something that is normally done?
I think it is significant. I think it was alluded to in Crystal Ridge, if I remember right. It was, in that context, it was the absence of the bank or the ability to mortgage it. So the bank certainly wasn't considering, in that case, the lessee to be the owner. So I think, I mean, you're right. When you ask the question, and from a very practical standpoint, who's the real or true owner? Well, on this indicia of ownership, the real or true owner goes to the person who can mortgage the property. I think that's why it's so relevant.
It didn't require the county to sign off or to put the bank in any other position. It was, as I understand it, it was an agreement, a monetary agreement between the lending institution and the daycare center.
Yeah, and in fact, it did occur. I mean, it's my understanding that the property was subject to a mortgage.
Well, what happened if the center defaulted?
Oh, that's okay.
I mean, the property is limited as to who can use it and how it can be used. So now the bank's got the mortgage. There's a default.
They'd go in the daycare business.
Yeah, is that the point?
I mean, that's the same as they do in other areas.
Can you sublet that in that way?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yes.
But
you want to answer that?
Yeah.
Not especially.
What I would emphasize is that, at least in the bank size, and they care about the security of the building, that it's secure enough that Milwaukee Regional Medical Center was considered to be the owner. The scenarios upon default, I think, are beyond the scope of our record, but the absence in Crystal Ridge and the presence here, I think that indicates that, once again, we're putting an indicia of ownership in favor of Milwaukee Regional Medical Center.
I have a question for you about you are here and you like the Court of Appeals opinion.
I did.
You've got other property. That's one of the point of Justice Prosser's question, where you may want it not taxable for any number of business reasons. So my question is, how would you, if you were going to write the opinion for this court, you might say, "Oh, I'm going to take Judge Fine's opinion as is. You know, it's really good, and you don't even have to bother to write another opinion. It goes through all the cases. Then goes through all the facts. It derives from the cases, simplifies. It appears to simplify. I'm looking at Appendix 17. Is this what you really want? I mean, in an ideal world, you can win anyway, but what would you do to change it? One of the aspects of this is it narrows down. I don't know if it narrows down. It synthesizes three cases into two rules. This is paragraph 29. The rule we derive from Mitchell, Gebhardt, Crystal Ridge, which is buildings on land lease from a tax-exempt entity, is the tax-exempt entity is the beneficial owner. That's the legal test. If, one, gets not inconsequential benefits, and two, has substantial control focused on preserving or enhancing those benefits. Are those the two tests that you would continue?
Well, he uses a double negative, which is very difficult to analyze, so I get rid of the not inconsequential right there.
Well, how would you redraft it?
You raise the question that I've been asking myself ever since I got the opinion. I mean, are we right on? Does it need to be modified?
Okay. Are we right on? Does it need to be modified?
I think we are right on. But it's in terms of the results in this case, whether you adopt Judge Fine's rule, a different rule, say we don't want to rule
out. Oh, I know. That's always counsel's position when you win. I want to know what the rule should be. I mean, what you really think is right, and how would you redraft his two? I mean, you already said you got a double negative in there. What would you do?
I think that
this is your chance to draft
the opinion.
I think
you should adopt it essentially as written, and here's why. All of these three cases talk about benefit and control. Before Judge Fine's decision, we talked about benefit and control. I think those are the issues, and he's got them. And the weighing process is encompassed within his test. So I think he's right on. So the question, one question is, well, when you have a rule, are you going to inadvertently exclude some facts in a future case that you're not contemplating right now? I mean, have we narrowed it too much here? And I don't think so. One, as I said, because I think he's really just restating and organizing the same analysis that's already out there. But secondly, when you go to the question of beneficial ownership, whether it's this court, the highest court in the state discussing it, or a layperson discussing it, I think you're going to get to the very same issues that Judge Fine got to, which is benefit and control. Because isn't that just saying who can do what with the property? Isn't that what control is? And what do you get out of the property? Isn't that what benefit is? So I'm very comfortable with the concepts that come out of Judge Fine's decision, which is to distill what's sort of scattered in the previous three and say, look at the indicia of ownership in terms of benefit and control.
Now, this was a summary judgment.
It was.
And so that means if summary judgment was granted, there's no material issues of fact in dispute, right?
Correct.
So all the advantages, disadvantages, terms are set out. So it's a question of law, is that it? Who's the beneficial owner?
True.
And Fine's opinion does its own balancing. Wiedemeyer's dissent looks at the trial court and says, hey, I agree with it, which did its own balancing.
Right.
Is that so? Have I figured that out right?
Yes, that's correct. I think that it's worth noting, though, that Judge Wiedemeyer talked about benefit and control in his dissent, too. So I think there is really a common thread, even in the dissent, about what are the relevant things to look at. Now, where Judge Wiedemeyer and the trial court differ from the majority opinion in the Court of Appeals, I think, is whether this indicia of ownership, whether they've tipped that scale. And I think that the trouble with both opinions is that some indicia weigh a whole lot more than others. And I might only have one indicia to talk about, but it might weigh a lot. For example, the exclusive use of the property has been turned over to Milwaukee Regional Medical Center. I think the trial court and Judge Wiedemeyer didn't weigh them and give them the weight that varies from case to case. The trial court particularly, I think, was perhaps more influenced by the number of indicia rather than the weight of the indicia. And Judge Wiedemeyer, perhaps the same. So I would suggest that this court adopt Judge Fine's opinion. I think it would be helpful. It's not the only way to handle beneficial ownership, but I think it's a good way, and I think it would be helpful. There wouldn't be any injustice if we didn't have that rule, because we'd still be talking about benefit and control. But certainly it organizes and articulates the common threads, and I think it would be helpful to future litigants.
Well, I was wondering, in the commercial world, and I'm going to come back to the fact that they're able to use this as collateral, and the Chief Justice asked the question on, well, what happens if they had to foreclose? Is that, and under the benefit and control, is that unique or is that common in the cases you've looked at? Now, we have the three, and I've read those, and then there was a Court of Appeals case I can't recall right offhand. But in looking at this whole situation of benefit control or the balancing. The fact that the leasehold could be somebody else could use it as it's used as collateral, and the reason you give money is, well, if something bad happened and they had to foreclose, was there anything in the document that allowed the county or someone to come back in and intercept the bank's interest, or was it simply that the control could be mortgaged? You understand what
I think I do understand, and I don't know the answer to your question.
Okay.
As it's been.
Well, I think in my mind's eye, now, of course, I think all my questions are significant, but this one, just it seems to me that if the bank, as the Chief Justice, if they could come in and take control, then that's very important because you wouldn't have somebody else coming in and say, paying off the mortgage. In other words, that wasn't the obligation of the county, who is the true owner, so to speak, after 50 years. So it must have been at least thought out that they had this control for that time that allowed somebody to come in and loan money, and if they didn't pay the money, they'd have to face the, I suppose, the normal result. If you don't pay it, then you lose that interest, or someone else comes in and buys it out.
Right. What we know is that the bank considered it a sufficient interest, that it was, that it used it as as collateral. And we know that it indeed happened in this case. And so it's the bank's perspective kind of entered into this mix in terms of if the bank thinks they're the real and true beneficial owner, certainly that's a strong favor. A strong issue on the side of taxation. And to my recollection, Crystal Ridge is the only case that discussed it.
Okay.
And it noted that the bank would not consider it, would not
So it was significant in Crystal Ridge that they did not. They
right.
were not able
yeah,
to.
Right.
Well,
right.
Didn't Crystal Ridge say the bank wouldn't consider it, didn't say that the lessor wouldn't permit it?
Right, you're right. That's correct.
Yeah, the other thing I wonder about this case, and you may not know, is were there personal guarantees for the mortgage?
For the mortgage?
Yeah, so that, in fact, there wasn't a possibility of the bank coming in and taking control of the property.
You're right. I don't know the answer
don't know
to that.
That.
I don't
Thank
know.
Thank you.
And I think the mortgage issue, it struck me because it came up in Crystal Ridge, so it struck me as important here. But significant or not, even if you took it out of the equation whatsoever, we're still tipping highly in favor of taxation, in my opinion, primarily because of this. You take the property for $1 a year without any true limits about how it's used, and with nominal benefits and remote benefits at the end of the lease. The other issue that was before the Court of Appeals and was touched upon briefly by a opposing counsel is whether Milwaukee Regional Medical Center is an educational association. And I know I'm coming to the end of my argument, so I'm going to try to be real concise, but this is a real common sense issue. Milwaukee Regional Medical Center isn't a hospital. It isn't a clinic. It's an organization that coordinates all these activities for the medical complex. And its bylaws are quoted in the briefs, of course, but the upshot of the bylaws are its purposes are to support medical services at the campus, medical campus, and then in the Milwaukee area. Its purpose is not to provide education to preschool children or other. I mean, it cannot be credibly argued that that's its primary purpose. You should note Milwaukee Regional Medical Center isn't licensed to run a daycare. It doesn't have any qualifications to run a daycare. It's a coordinating body. They hired somebody else to run the daycare. And to determine whether Milwaukee Regional Medical Center is an educational association, there is a complicated test. I'm certain I'm not going to get to talk about all of it. But the very first question is the plaintiff must be an educational association itself to qualify under 7011 sub 4. Before we talk about the use of the land, before we talk about anything else, we're talking strictly about the organization. And when you look at the organization, you look at its activities as a whole, that's what the trustees of Indiana University case demonstrates. They were here in Wisconsin trying to claim an exemption as an educational association, and the court looked at its activities here in Wisconsin at this camp, and they looked at its activities back home in Indiana to determine whether this alumni association was an educational association. They did not look solely at the activities at this particular land. So in your consideration, I don't think you should look just at what is happening at this particular property.
Could I ask if Justice Butler made a substantial contribution to the daycare center, could he take a tax deduction?
The Milwaukee Regional Medical Center is a 501c3 organization. The company that actually manages it is for profit, and they operate it, they set the curriculum, they pay their teachers. So the first question is he making a contribution to Child Time, or is he making a contribution to Milwaukee Regional Medical Center? And it certainly would not receive a tax deduction for if it was to Child Time. And for Milwaukee Regional Medical Center, I think that's a 501c3 issue. I mean, it's a charitable organization, which is an income tax issue. It's not a property tax issue. Here,
it's not limited to educational institutions.
It is right. It's not limited to that. The income and tax analysis would be different. And I don't argue that it qualifies under 501c3. But it runs a flight for life, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center does. It has a warehouse that it makes available for leases of these constituents at the medical complex. It has a daycare, but an important part that you can't really quantify, at least our record doesn't quantify, is all of the efforts it makes to coordinate the activities. I mean, it makes uniform signage for the campus, talks about handle stormwater issues for the campus. It is the sort of the liaison for all of these different entities there. And I don't think that it comes close to being an educational association. I see my time is up.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Harris, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. Justice Wilcox, you had asked about the insurance, and you were a little confused in my calculation on how that comes into play. MRMC pays for the insurance, and both MRMC and the county are named as co-insured on the building, on the casualty insurance. On the liability insurance, MRMC is named and the county is named as an additional insured. So the county is getting full benefit from that insurance. It's protecting all of its interest up to and including any personal injury that might occur on that daycare property that someone may sue the county for. And the cost of that is $18,000 a year. And so that I included in the calculation. I would also, going on to another issue that was raised, a counsel for the city has suggested that the controls identified in MRMC case are not warranting an exemption because they're not as substantial as the other cases. Well, if you are to take a table and identify the three cases or the four cases, including MRMC, and I tried to do that to see, well, how many different indicia are we actually looking at? It amounts to a very long list and a very complex table because every property is a little different. But I ended up with somewhere around 5 pages of different indicia when I did that table. When you line them up, MRMC has virtually identical controls except for the day-to-day operation of the business. And the differences there, I think you can explain based on what type of property it is.
Excuse me, counsel. Yes. I want to make sure I understood in your earlier argument, you said that you concede that with regard to control day-to-day, with regard to the indicia of control, that the center has more control, but the benefits are greater in the balancing test. What did I get your concession right, or what did you concede earlier in oral argument in terms of the center having more?
I don't concede that the MRMC has more control over the property as a whole than the county has. What I do concede is as to the day-to-day actual nuts and bolts operation of the facility, okay, MRMC has more control.
Okay. So what did, since you're involved with the exemption part, as far as the leasehold being mortgaged,
yes,
and someone being able to come in, you use it for collateral, and I'm only talking about my own experience with banks, but if you don't pay, they want to come back and get what you have. They haven't got mine yet, but what I'm saying is that this is what bothers me, that if there is a control and there was a foreclosure, would they be able to run it?
By the terms of the lease, in the terms of the bond,
yes,
which are in the record, the bank could not come in and operate the daycare center. The lease is very clear. The only entity that can lease the center and can operate it is MRMC. So the bank would not recognize it as being similar to another for-profit daycare center.
So what is their collateral then? Tables and chairs. I mean, what the building itself? What?
Well, if you look at the bond statement and the bonds themselves and the mortgage covers far more than just the daycare center. It's the full faith and credit of MRMC itself and its members. It is the other property that MRMC has, and it includes their history, basically, their ability to pay,
right,
which is always a factor. So the bank, on default, has very, very limited rights. There's very little they can do, and they even warned the bondholders of that in the financing statement, saying, we don't really have much of anything.
Well, but a bank isn't a charitable organization. I mean,
no.
They're in business to make money and have obligations under their regulations to have only sound loans, and
yes.
So
why would the bank do that?
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Well, that's why the bank demanded that there be far more than just the daycare center in the collateral for the bonds. It demanded that MRMC itself.
Just so I understand that transaction, the bank's money went to build or construct the daycare center, right?
Yes.
Yes. So they used other collateral to help get the loan, right?
Yes. The bonds actually were
for much more
than just the amount to pay the daycare center. I believe they were about $30 million. So it was much more than the daycare mm-hmm. center. It was comprehensive. And I see my light is off.
Thank you, Council. Thank you, Ms. Darris. Thank you, Ms. O'Donnell, for your discussion of difficult issue on taxation, property tax, 2005 AP 1160, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center, Inc. versus City of Wauwatosa is now concluded. The court will recess and will have oral argument next week, the last day of oral argument for the January sitting, and the court will meet in closed conference at 3:45. We are in recess.